Coming up on this week's show, the Premier League breaks a record on US TV. We reveal which longtime commentator is leaving ESPN. Copa Libertadores returns to US television and springs a surprise. ESPN announces plans for a brand new Bundesliga season. Plus, we have letters from you, the listeners, in our mailbag section. I'm Christopher Harris, a.k.a. The Gaffer, joined alongside my co-host, Kartik Krishnaiyer. Now, Kartik, we've got a lot to get to in this episode. There's a whole bunch of different ways we can go. But first, before we jump right in, just for those listeners who are new to this podcast, this is the only soccer media podcast in the business. We've been doing this now for this incarnation of this podcast for about 3 years, maybe 4 years. And the podcast itself has been running since 2006. As far as I know, it's the longest running consecutive podcast on the planet. But what we focus on really is more the soccer media side. So talking about the television coverage, talking about the streaming accessibility, talking about all of the changes, talking about the commentators, the co-commentators, who has the best coverage, who has the coverage that needs to be improved the most. But before we get into, well, I guess this is kind of part of what we've been watching, which is our first segment where we talk about one of our favorite games from this past week. This past week was a big change, of course. We had the launch of the Premier League, the launch of, well, not the launch of the Premier League, but a launch of a new season. And the big differentiator with this one was this is the first season, first full season that we have Peacock. So Peacock is NBC's streaming solution. It's going to be streaming more of the games than in the past that used to be on NBC Sports Gold. But for most Premier League fans, it's a big change. And from the games this past weekend, Kartik, there were, Brighton against Chelsea was on there, and Spurs against Everton. And I think there was one other game on there. But the two big ones, Spurs against Everton, and then Brighton.
West Ham Newcastle.
West Ham Newcastle. That's the one that got bumped. Originally, it was on television, but that one got bumped to Peacock. What were your first impressions of from this past weekend, Peacock, and also NBC's coverage?
So I had just a little bit of difficulty with Peacock. I had some issues late in matches, in two of the matches, the Newcastle West Ham match and the Everton Spurs match, where I'd watched it on my LG smart television straight through, and then between minute 85 and 88, there were some buffering issues. There was a stall. Then you would have to go back out, reload it. Pretty quick process, but you fall behind in the game. So that happened, and I, in fact, during stoppage time of the Everton West Ham match, Everton Spurs match, I did check FootMob to see if the match was over, and it was, and I was in like the third minute of stoppage time, so I was about a minute behind. So no problem. So slight problem there in terms of the streaming side. I think I may have had something. No, I didn't. Okay. So my other issue with Peacock was Peacock has given us this wonderful 24/7 Premier League TV, right, which is done by IMG Premier League Productions. I have not been a particular fan of NBC studio programs of late. What ends up happening is after the Chelsea Brighton game, it's the usual nonsense. I mean, I think Tim Howard made some good points actually in the post game with that, but I'm fed up with their studio coverage. So I switched to this channel that they're giving us on Peacock, and it basically they blacked out Peacock, the Premier League TV, during NBCSN coverage or Peacock coverage of the Premier League. So they're forcing, which is smart on their part, but then I'm all excited about this 24/7 channel, and then I realize I can't actually use it when they're showing domestic coverage from here. So that was another frustration, although that channel is highly recommended. I've checked it out a few times this week. I think it's going to be a regular staple of my viewing. So for those of you complaining about Peacock, this is some added value you get with it, which is this 24/7 Premier League channel, which you have to find in the list of channels, right? You go and you get NBC and MSNBC and CNBC and then all the Sky channels and Bravo and USA. If you subscribe to Peacock, you can go down to that and you've got that.
So this past weekend, Kartik, we had a bunch of different groups of people flocking to Peacock or not flocking. But basically what you have is you have your mainstream soccer fans. So maybe you're fans of Manchester United, you're fans of Liverpool, you're fans of Chelsea, you're fans of Spurs, kind of more of your mainstream soccer fans, which is nothing wrong with that. That's totally fine. Then you have the hardcore soccer fans who probably are more religious about it, trying to watch as many games as possible. They may have their favorite team, they probably do, or they might be a neutral, but you have those two different camps. And then probably you have some of the ones that are more tech savvy, and this could be some of your mainstream fans, or this could be some of your hardcore fans, but some tech savvy ones. And then you have another group that's your people that are not tech savvy, who are not, who may have internet and may have even an iPhone, but they're not up to speed on Chromecast and Roku and Amazon Fire TV sticks and all that technology. So what you have is all these different groups of people canvassing, in the United States and wanting to watch these games. And a Spurs against Everton, a Brighton against Chelsea, those are matches that had some big ramifications. So from the website, from Twitter, through this podcast, through emails, I got barraged from the past week. So many comments, questions, a lot of questions. But it by the end of the weekend, I was kind of sick of Peacock because I was trying to answer as many questions as possible, trying to help people understand what the differences are between the free Peacock tier, the Peacock Premium, the Peacock Premium Plus. A lot of information out there. But what about you, Kartik? So, like, you and I would be hardcore fans, right? Diehard fans. You're very tech savvy, as am I. So I kind of expected this. I kind of expected that we'd have a lot of, we hear a lot of complaints. We'd hear a lot of people with questions. I expected it. What was your reaction from what you saw?
I was a little stunned. I mean, I guess I'm not stunned about the tech savvy part. I mean, to be honest with you, one of my things I'm least tech savvy at are these smart TVs. I don't know how a Chromecast works or PlayStation Live or any of that. Well, that's gone now. But those sorts of things. I mean, I have an Apple TV and I use that. And then the LG smart TV that I have has Peacock built into it, believe it or not. I think that they've actually done. I know they've had a hard time with Roku and Amazon Fire Stick and that stuff that we talked about. That again, as I said, I don't know that much about. They have done a good thing in getting on the smart TVs. The LG and I'm sure some other manufacturers just have Peacock built in, like it's another channel on the television. So that's you get like Netflix, Amazon Prime, Button, Curiosity Stream, CBS, and then you have actually there is no CBS All Access or Paramount Plus now, but or ESPN, but there is a Peacock thing. So that didn't surprise me that people were confused about that. What did surprise me is the number of people who were angry about matches being on Peacock and were reacting very in a very very kind of churlish way in some cases. I'm not always a defender of NBC's Premier League coverage. I think when we get into the actual coverage, I'm going to in a few minutes, I'll be even more critical. But I think there was ample opportunity and ample time in NBC for people to adjust. NBC has done this, I think, pretty respectfully. The first 4 years they had the Premier League, they gave us NBC Sports Live Extra that if you had access to it, gave you every game for free. Then they transitioned to NBC Sports Gold, which meant you had to pay for a little under half the matches, right? About maybe 30 or 35% of the matches that you used to get for free, but they were generally matches that did not involve the bigger clubs. Maybe Liverpool, Man City, Man United would end up on gold 2-3 times a season, right? Yep. And now they're transitioning to a model where they're putting more of the big teams behind that paywall that they had built with NBC Sports Gold. And by the way, Peacock is cheaper than NBC Sports Gold, or about the same price, maybe slightly cheaper, with a lot more value to it. And then they're not doing that much more, Chris, in terms of it's not like they're throwing 80% of their games behind the paywall and only had 10% behind last year. I think they had about 35% of their games behind the paywall last year, and it'll be about 50% this year. So it's not and obviously those numbers could change. We see they've moved matches that were supposed to be on television to Peacock. I'll concede they've done that in the last couple of weeks, and including one match last week, as you mentioned, Newcastle West Ham was originally supposed to be on NBCSN, but I don't think it's as big a deal as people are making it out to be. And if I'm being insensitive, I'm sorry. I'd love to hear your feedback on that. But yeah. I just don't think this is this global tragedy people are making it out to be.
Well, the big difference, though, Kartik, is that this is actually pretty similar to NBC Sports Gold, except for one thing, which is the bigger matches are on Peacock. Now, in the past, NBC Sports Gold has been around for a few years. Anyone who's a Premier League fan or a fan of a Premier League club, especially from a club in the bottom half of the table, is pretty used to that technology, having to watch myself, a few years ago, watching Swansea games. I had to subscribe to that to be able to catch everything. What's different now is that you've got the Chelseas, the Spurs, the Man Uniteds, the Liverpools, the Arsenals, and those... the big six, really. Those fans are getting impacted by this more than ever before. The second part of it, though, is that, yes, NBC Sports Gold is not... well, Peacock is not the same thing as NBC Sports Gold. So the NBC Sports Gold audience was hardcore fans. They were diehard fans. So when they've migrated from NBC Sports Gold to Peacock, Peacock doesn't have the same functionality that they got on NBC Sports Gold. Most importantly, right now at least, if you want to go ahead and watch any of the, say, Premier League Today, which is their news show, or some of their classic footage archives, the fantasy football show, you have to watch it live. There's no on-demand available. Hopefully that's something that will happen over the course of time. Peacock will add on-demand functionality for the Premier League TV channel. But it's not there yet. So that's definitely a big hang-up for the NBC Sports Gold audience. But really, Kartik, this is all about NBC moving these bigger games to Peacock and making it exclusive to Peacock. And just wait for this weekend. This weekend, there's only two games on television. Every single one of the other ones, the eight, are going to be on Peacock exclusively. There's only one game on TV on Saturday, one game on TV on Sunday. Everything else is on Peacock. And I think part of the reason for that, though, too, I mean, NBC Sports is still sticking to, they're saying, 175 games this season exclusive to Peacock, which represents about 46%. And it's just, I think you mentioned like 35% perhaps last year. But so it's gone up just about 10%. But they are going to be bigger games. But this weekend, and Kartik, you know this better than I do, there's other coverage on. I believe it's the Tour de France is on, and it's one of the Opens.
U.S. Open and golf.
Yeah, so you've got the U.S. Open, and you've got – so even if Peacock –
look, they even bumped the Notre Dame-South Florida college football game to USA, just for our listeners to know that even college football got bumped this weekend.
Yeah, and that's the thing, though, too. So even if Peacock didn't exist and we were heading into this weekend, chances are most of those games would be on NBC Sports Gold, and maybe they would put one on CNBC or try to find some other coverage available. But NBC and NBCSN this weekend are pretty well done booked. After this weekend, it'll get better where there's not as many games on Peacock week in, week out. But the games that will...
remember, that's... oh, sorry, I was just going to mention to the listeners, remember that's because those two events are summer events that have been rescheduled because of COVID.
Yeah. But again, too, even after this this weekend, the big sports weekend with golf and tennis and Tour de France and all sorts of things, even then, in the future, it's still going to be big games. The big games, the Liverpool-Chelsea game, the other, I think, is a Liverpool-Arsenal game coming up. Those are going to be Peacock, and that's the big change. That's the big factor that's really pissing people off. People are getting upset, saying all sorts of things. You've seen it on social media too, Kartik, I'm sure. But NBC Sports is in the business of trying to break even or trying to make a profit on the rights that they paid for the Premier League. They paid approximately $1 billion for the rights, which is a lot of money, and they're trying to find ways to go ahead and actually get that money back, but also at the same time, go ahead and actually make Peacock a thing. Make it something that we're watching Peacock just as much as Netflix. We're not there yet, but that's their hope. That's their goal. It's the biggest thing from Comcast and NBC. Now, Kartik,
and I also have to point out that you and I came up in an era in this country where we had to buy all these premium packages to watch this league. So it shocked me this weekend, the entitlement. And maybe it's partly my perspective. Maybe I'm too old school. Maybe I'm the grumpy old man saying, oh, I had to buy Satanta and had to buy an extra package to get Fox Soccer Channel and Fox Sports World. But I think a lot of us that have been around have also just had an expectation we have to pay to see soccer, to see the top soccer in the world. So the ESPN Plus for the Bundesliga and for Serie A, I mean, it's just part of the territory. I guess there are a lot of younger people, Chris, who maybe their experience with the league, with these leagues, are that they're on cable television and they're basically free, although you pay for your cable package. So maybe that's why there's a disconnect between my perspective and their perspective.
Yeah, just to put this into context too, Kartik, this past week I subscribed to Swans TV, which is my favorite club, Swansea City, and they have a live streaming of games. Nothing available on demand. It's only live, and it's home and away, unless some of the games are on ESPN Plus, and then it's on ESPN Plus only. So it's probably about 85% of the games for the season I have access to. It's $200 a year. It used to be last season, it was $140 or $146. It's gone up, from $150 to $200, which is crazy. But that's just one team. And that's just, I mean, I'm willing to pay that because that's my club. But in perspective, then Peacock is a bargain for what you get. And yes, it's a pain in the butt as far as it's a change that we have to get used to. But when I look at all the streaming services out there that are streaming soccer, I think I could go through every single one. And there's things that are not perfect with any of them. ESPN Plus is wonderful as far as the price and all of the actual streaming it offers. But it's buggy. There's been times where I know there's a game on there. I can't find it. It's not listed. I have to search for it. Sometimes with some of the MLS games I've watched on there, I know that there's an English language broadcast of it available, but the Spanish language is the only one that comes up. So on and so forth. I can go through all these different streaming services. None of them are perfect. And hopefully Peacock will get better with time. But it's early days. It is early days. And hopefully, I mean, they're listening. I know that the NBC Sports executives listen to this podcast. I know that they read the articles that we write. They read the comments. They're looking at this, trying to understand the audience better. And that's part of it, too, is that a lot of the negativity, a lot of the criticism, a lot of the reaction are learning lessons. They're learning as they go along, trying to figure out, okay, what is it that this audience wants? I mean, kind of from the technical point of view, what things can we improve? What things are things that are asking for that's doable, but it might take some time to actually implement that? So I would say, last but not least, just have patience. Hopefully things will get better. But definitely, like I said, we've been warning people on this podcast for months, Kartik. Peacock is a massive deal. And I think now a lot of fans are waking up to that and seeing that the big games are on Peacock.
One last point. When you fire up your Peacock app, it's right there. You find it. So you mentioned ESPN Plus. Now, we're going to have a lot of Bundesliga matches this coming week on ESPN Plus. We have one match on linear television, and the other the other eight will be on ESPN Plus. I don't know that I'll find those matches as easily, particularly the Dortmund match, which I'm going to watch live, as I did the Premier League matches on Peacock, to be perfectly honest. So that I really liked. It was the interface. It was easy. You go on, I'll open Peacock up. You see it right away. They highlight the Premier League.
Right. Yeah, definitely. And actually, even Friday's Bayern Schalke game is on ESPN Plus too. So every single game will be on ESPN Plus. But I mean, for most people, they're probably on Friday. They'll probably watch it on ESPN or ESPN Deportes, but it is available on ESPN Plus, and every single game you will get through ESPN Plus. Now, Kartik, as far as the actual NBC sports analysis, you probably watched and listened to it more than I did. But I would say we'll probably get to it in a little bit too. But the Liverpool-Leeds game, I enjoyed the commentary of Arlo White, Graham Lasso, and Lee Dixon. And I thought, I mean, part of it too is it's the first big match of the season. with the trio, and it's been a while since we've heard them doing, since what, July, doing some of the Premier League matches. And over time, I usually get a little bit tired of Arlo's, you mean, incessive talking and kind of just too much stats. But as far as it being a new season, it was a welcome return. There were some things that Arlo talked about, which I enjoyed. There were, and Lee and Graham are so different in their analysis that they often present different points of view in the game itself. So it's always a learning experience with Lee Dixon and Graham Lasso. Lee Dixon more so, historically speaking, doing the coverage. But that I enjoyed. As far as the rest of the coverage, I saw nothing jumped out, nothing special. But what about you? What stood out for you?
Well, so on that three-man booth for the Liverpool-Leeds match, I appreciate having two defenders there when it's a game of horrific defending, because I think particularly Lee Dixon, but Lasso also point out some very obvious things that sometimes attacking players who are co-commentators don't point out, and some things that also may not be so obvious that they pointed out. So I appreciated the three-man booth for that match. I think maybe Arlo White, I thought he had a good match, other than I think dumbing down the coverage a little bit to talk about Bielsa and educate the audience about Bielsa. I think most people who follow world football have known about Marcelo Bielsa for two decades. But maybe the Premier League fan in the U.S. doesn't know as much about him. This is another shock to me, and this has nothing to do with NBC. The number of people who hadn't watched Leeds the last two seasons that are then interacting with me when I rated them so highly, I was shocked, because I firmly believe it. I'll say it again on this podcast. I think if Leeds had been in the Premier League last season, they would have finished in the top half. As a championship team, I think they would have finished in the top half. So I'm actually impressed that Liverpool beat them and were able to meet the punch, right, that came from Leeds. Studio coverage, I didn't like it. I think the coverage has been dumbed down. They don't talk about anything terribly interesting or compelling. I thought Tim Howard was pretty good, but again, you know, they're not asking him necessarily the tough questions. Robbie Earl, Robbie Musto are good. But they're better on their podcast, right? They talk about, for some reason, the really good analytical stuff that Earl and Musto give us is now on the two Robbies and not in the NBC studio. And that's something, maybe, again, they've done market research in the audience, the hardcore geeks like me are listening and watching the two Robbies and are getting our fix that way and not through the studio shows. Maybe the studio shows are supposed to be dumbed down, but I didn't care for it much. I thought, again, I know I've been saying this for a couple of seasons, ESPN FC, with whether it's Dan Thomas or Kay Murray hosting, did a much better job reviewing Premier League matches than NBC did. And then I liked the Premier League TV channel. I mentioned that's on Peacock, although you do make a good point. I hadn't tried to do that yet, Chris, and I used to be able to watch some of those shows on demand on Gold and did not realize that they're not available on Peacock on demand. So I guess I won't look for them then.
Yeah, it's live only, and it's a strange – well, it's not strange. The reality of our world now is that unless it's a football match, we're not watching the content live. So even if it's ESPN FC or if it's Premier League Today or whatever show it may be, most of the time I think we're watching it on delay. We're watching it on demand. We're watching it when it's convenient for us. It's really difficult to drop everything and watch a Premier League Today show at 6 a.m. on an Eastern morning or a 10 a.m. Eastern or a fantasy football show, whichever. There's actually some good content on there. And actually going back to what you said before too, where they blacked out during the pregame coverage too, which having seen that pregame coverage overseas from the Premier League productions, it's really good. And usually the reporters are there at the stadium, they're outside giving live updates. You kind of get a good feel for the build up to the game. And with NBC's coverage, it has become very predictable. It has become very safe. I think in some ways, though, Kartik, like you and I definitely could talk about Bielsa and Leeds United. We could do a whole podcast on it easily from what we've seen just in the past few years, watching them battle it out in the championship, the highs and lows. But I still think, though, even though they're talking down to us, I think for the most part, they're informing and educating the audience, because most of them weren't watching the championship on ESPN Plus in the last couple of years. So I think it's important to do kind of a primer. Now, whether they'll Arlo will continue to do that every time that Leeds is on television and he's commentating, that'll be interesting to see. But there was one thing, let me just add in before you chime in, Kartik, is that Arlo did bring up the story about Bielsa. And I thought this is something I didn't know, but about Bielsa when he's coaching games, that sometimes he would let the other teams get the throw-ins, and that he, studying the games, the scholar that he is, would know kind of the weak points of teams. And Liverpool in this one, you know, took a throw-in, and Leeds were able to capitalize on that and score a goal, which I thought was really, really enlightening. That was something I didn't know, and I appreciated that analysis.
Yeah, that was a good point, and I think Arlo and Graham Rousseau had a really good call on the Spurs Everton match, and were really on top of what Ancelotti is doing with Everton and the changes that he's made in that midfield. So I thought that was a really good broadcast. So when I'm criticizing NBC, I'm actually not criticizing the White Rousseau Dixon combo. I think that they had a really good weekend. It's the studio shows that have become predictable, have become stale, and Peacock is offering us a potential alternative if it doesn't get blacked out, right, with Premier League television. The other point on that broadcast, the Everton Spurs match, is I think maybe they've heard our critiques of them and Jose Mourinho, and it seemed like it had been dialed back a bit. They weren't talking as much about Mourinho. Again, that was White and Lasso. I'm not sure about the studio. I didn't pay too much attention to the studio after that match, but they were focusing on the match. They were focusing on how Ancelotti had rebuilt Everton's midfield, and they were focusing a lot on Decore and James and Alan as new signings for Everton. So I thought that coverage was very good. But by the way, that was on Peacock. Now I remember that was not right. On NBCSN.
Yeah, the thing with NBC Sports is I think they can do better. I mean, we've seen them do better. Lately, it's been one of those things where if something happens, there's something scandalous, or there's a bone of contention, or something happens where it's like, wow, did you just see that? Then they react to that. Then they're really good at analyzing that. The one example from recently would have been June or July with Norwich, and just the players coming out after the full-time whistle and sitting on the sidelines and the camera zooming in on that. And Rebecca and the two Robbies talking about that, like, what's going on here? Like, shouldn't they be back in the dressing room, in the changing room, and talking to the manager and just kind of doing this in a private manner rather than publicly showing their frustration at what was going on? And that was something that was very reactive. It was fantastic to catch it and see it and talk about it. But going into a game, I'm not rushing into games as much as I used to with NBC Sports to listen to their analysis, to get a perspective from a Kyle Martino or from a Mark Clattenburg or from the two Robbies. I think it's become very, very safe and very comfortable, and we don't get too many surprises anymore. Any where we walk away and go like, oh my gosh, that was incredible.
I knew I was going to miss Kyle Martino, but I really did miss him. And I know I tweeted that, and there were some snickers out there. Some people agreed with me. But yeah, I think he brings a level of analysis, analytical look at it, which I would say the two Barabbas do also. But now that's – I don't know if NBC Sports is telling them to save it for the podcast. I don't know what the deal is there. But they're giving it on the podcast and not giving it necessarily in the studio. And I know Robbie Musto can be incredibly detail oriented in his analysis. I mean, he's one of the best in the business. It seems like his wings have been clipped a bit. This is just my observation from watching it, that maybe they don't want to broach certain subjects. Maybe it's for good reason, Chris. I mean, I'm complaining about it, but it's possible that they've done market research. They know what their audience is. Their audience doesn't want to hear all these tactical discussions. They don't want to see Martino and Musto at a chalkboard or at a, you know, that thing that they had, that Microsoft Surface thing. They want this sort of thing that they're giving. But I don't find it particularly compelling. And again, once again, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, I'm going to ESPN FC and I'm watching Dan Thomas and the boys break down what they saw, because I need to get that, because I'm not getting that from NBC.
So for anyone who listened to the podcast last episode and hung on till the end, you and I spent a good 5 minutes or so, maybe even 10 minutes, talking about Leeds United and talking about some of the history, but also some of the expectations. And also both you and I saying like, oh my gosh, watch out for this team. This team is absolutely incredible to watch. Just amazing the work rate and how Bielsa has this team playing. And the match, Kartik, lived up to expectations. It even surpassed it. It was, I mean, defensively, it was a nightmare. But what a game, though. This was, a 4-3 game. Leeds, to me, was worth, Liverpool too, but worth every penny watching this match. It could have easily gone the other way. It could have been Leeds winning 4-3. A lot of controversial calls in this one. But from start to finish, from 0 minutes to 90 minutes, just a wonderful game to watch. It had me hooked the whole time.
Yeah, and Leeds is only going to get better. Rodrigo is going to become acclimated to the Premier League. Tyler Roberts, player you know very well, Welsh player, he's going to be fit at some point again. I know Bielsa really likes him, and he only could play him, 10 minutes at the end of the match or something. I love Jamie Shackleton in midfield. He didn't start, but he's a guy that reminds me so much of, I want to say Michael Carrick, but he's a smaller player. So, you know, maybe like a Harry Winks right now at Spurs. There's so many guys that even were on the periphery, the three subs I'm talking about that came on for Leeds. So, I'm really excited about this. And Bielsa football isn't like other football that you watch. And I think that may have been a real revelation to the Premier League viewer who is not used to the sort of movement you see in the final third off the ball that you saw from Leeds players. They were always finding space. And that's that is what Bielsa has done everywhere he's been at the club level and also with the Chilean national team, the Argentine national team. I'm not going to address that. I think that they had deeper issues and obviously he got scapegoated for it. But it's magical football to watch. I know we had this conversation at the end of the last podcast, right? But I hope some of the people who had not seen Leeds United play prior to this now know why you and I are so excited about them being back in the Premier League.
Yeah, and that's the thing too. I just can't wait until the fans return, and especially the Leeds United fans. I mean, they're just such a great fan base and just so passionate. But the other thing about this game, though, the Liverpool Leeds game too, Kartik, is you take any of the other managers in the Premier League, 3-3 at Anfield, they would have locked it down. They would have shut it down. Okay, park. 11 players behind the ball, and they just stop Liverpool from scoring. And Leeds were going at it until the last minute of the game. They were going for it. Such a refreshingly different, attractive, passionate, attacking style of football. I mean, I'm just so excited about Leeds United this season and looking forward to watching the games. I'm not even a Leeds fan, but I will watch these games. Now, Kartik, we'll take one more from you as far as some of the things you've been watching this week that was of interest. But I'll just throw mine out here. And that was Copa Libertadores return to U.S. television this week after a long break due to the global pandemic. And so I tuned in this week to watch, I think it was on Tuesday night, was Jorge Wilstermann, which is a team from Bolivia, against Atletico Paranense. And this was a joy to watch, a really, really good game to watch. And most of all, for me, the pleasant surprise here, and I didn't expect this at all, I'm listening to the voice of the commentator. I'm like, hey, I know that voice. That sounds really familiar. Is it Max Bredos? And I looked it up on Twitter to see if he said anything about it. And lo and behold, it's Max Bredos on BN Sports, commentating the Copa Libertadores. But not only was it great to hear Max and his unique goal calls, which if you haven't heard it, it's one of a kind, but he was really informative. I watched this game because of Max. Normally, maybe I would have flipped the channel and gone on to watch Colo Colo against Peñarol in the bigger game of the two. But Max was talking about the different players, like saying, hey, watch this guy. This guy's really good. He's coming on the field right now. He's built like a tank. I mean, just given the stories, the backstories and how pivotal this game was in terms of for Jorge Wilstermann, how important it was for them to win this game, talking about the altitude, talking about the stadium. Man, he had me hooked, and I hope that Max continues doing more work for BN Sports, because it made a difference, and I'm going to keep on watching the games and hopefully look out for some of his commentary.
Yeah, let's hope he does more games. I mean, I think I've mentioned several times in this incarnation on the podcast the last 3 years how much I miss him on the call of matches, and how much I even miss him hosting in the studio. And while he was at SportsCenter, I felt like ESPN didn't use him enough on soccer coverage. But that was also – it also coincided with ESPN having less soccer coverage than they had prior to Max getting there and after now. So for me, real quickly, I watched, obviously, the CBS Sports Champions League special. Alex Scott did a very good job on that. I watched a lot of NWSL this weekend, and WSL. I'm watching more women's soccer than I ever have before. NWSL had a match on CBS. WSL had a 9-1 match on NBCSN, which was really a pretty poor advertisement for the league, because West Ham was that bad. A fair amount of Liga MX on 2DNA, and that league is back, and the post-COVID Mexico situation is a little, or it's not post-COVID really, it's, you know, the restart of Liga MX has been kind of stop-start in its place, so there's been some inconsistencies. Last thing, I gotta mention this, Chris. I know a couple weeks ago I said I wasn't going to watch it. Not only did I watch it, I binged it, and I've watched all 9 episodes now since the last podcast, and that's All or Nothing. All or Nothing Spurs, featuring Jose Mourinho. I'm going to do a mea culpa here. You know, I rate Bielsa so highly. I obviously was a fan of Allegri. I am a fan of Pep's. The documentaries about those clubs that they're at, Leeds, Man City, and Juventus, were like, okay, after an episode, I kind of got it, right? Mm-hmm. And it was monotonous to watch the rest of it. You were right about this. So I watch the first 30 minutes. I'm thoroughly disgusted about Pochettino getting sacked, which I am in real life. But it's like, okay, I'm going to see how the transition is to Mourinho, see what he does. And then I was hooked, because Jose remains Jose. And maybe this is why NBC and Sky spend so much time sensationalizing anything he says or does, because there is a natural kind of humanistic hook to his megalomania. And he is a megalomaniac, right? Which Pep isn't, which Bielsa isn't, which Allegri isn't. I mean, they have their obviously their egos, and they have their principles. And in the case of Bielsa, his ideological principles stand at the top, I think, of world football. But in terms of just color and entertainment and learning about the psychology and how a manager presses certain buttons and how a manager, you know, does certain things behind closed doors. And even though we've learned since that he wouldn't let them film his tactics, in terms of the psychology of the game, you will never get a lesson like this, I think, on television. It was – or on streaming. It was pretty unbelievable, and I'm here to do a mea culpa. I binged it. I will probably watch all 9 episodes again at some point, because as much as I dislike Mourinho, I think there's so much to learn from watching Mourinho, and that's what I have to say about that documentary. It was pretty amazing, actually.
Wow, Kartik, that's a huge U-turn from a couple of weeks ago, where you were like, I am not watching this at all because of Poch getting sacked. Or you'd watch the first 20 minutes.
But, I said I was just going to watch that, which I did. So yeah. I watched the first 20 minutes, Poch gets sacked, and I'm like, let me see what happens when Mourinho takes over, and then I was hooked.
Yep, they had you hooked. They got you hook, line, and sinker. I enjoyed, I mean, like just to recap, I mean, I enjoyed learning more about the individuals, like Harry Kane and Dele Alli and Jose and so on and so forth, Son, etc. And a lot of them kind of reconfirmed kind of how I felt they seemed to be. I mean, so I felt like I learned more about the individuals. What I didn't like was that it was so polished. I mean, there was the incident, or actually not incident, but there was the moment in the series where Jose is at his desk and he's writing some notes, and then he's listening to Sky Sports News. And to me, the whole thing was fabricated. It seemed so fake. He was listening to what they were saying about Jose. Yeah, he's back. I don't think he has it any longer. You mean he's not as good as a coach as he used to be. And he gets up off his chair, walks to the television, and tells him to F off. I thought that thing seemed really fake and really kind of like, all right, this trying to do something.
Yeah, I agree on that particular moment, yes.
But if they took that out, it would definitely, the overall series, the parts that I saw, which is probably the first three or four episodes, if I'm a Spurs fan or if I want to learn more about the Premier League, I want to learn more about how a club works, it was interesting. What I didn't like is that it's very polished. It's very much almost like a Jose documentary, and to make Spurs look great and to make them look like a world beaters, like a really good club that's kind of high level. So much so to the point that I think Amazon announced that they've announced a partnership with Tottenham Hotspur. They're creating a whole online store. It's an Amazon Spurs co-branded store that sells Spurs merchandise. And to me, that takes out the kind of the investigative part of a documentary, or the objective part of a documentary, where you want to get really behind the scenes and really get to know the characters and show some things that make that maybe Jose or the club would be a little bit embarrassed about, or just show them the reality. I don't think this is the reality. I think this is kind of a really a PR effort to make them look as good as possible.
Yeah, I'd say that about all those documentary series. I think the thing that I appreciated about this also was that with Daniel Levy, you get a look at how an executive who has to manage, who is infamous for the way he handles transfers, has to deal with that stuff. And you see both the good and the bad. I mean, I guess it depends on your perspective. Like, maybe they thought they were making the club look good by the way they showed the way they handled the Eriksson situation. I thought it made them look bad. Maybe that's my perspective, and I thought it made them look bad how they were kind of jerking Danny Rose around also, and then he does get to go to Newcastle, and as of this taping, he still doesn't have a squad number this season for Spurs. So maybe it's my perspective. I thought, and maybe it's because I've watched Rose and Eriksson for years, and I like both those players, that and I think Rose in particular, having been such a long servant to that club, I'm saying, hey, Levy and Mourinho are being jerks to him. But maybe that was my interpretation, and maybe the casual viewer won't get that. But we got more from Levy in the transfer window than we got from like Soriano and Brugiristan in the Manchester City documentary. And we also saw Spurs kind of wheeling dealing side that I think we know so much about how that works. The one thing I think that was very polished, and I agree with you on, that was propaganda-ish, is all the discussion of the new stadium.
Yep.
Because I have to say, I think the new stadium is a noose around Spurs. I really feel like they're going to be in the same kind of restricted period financially that Arsenal was in at when they built their new stadium. I don't see anyone talking about this in the media. I don't see people speculating on this. Anytime I speculated on social media, there's this flurry of Spurs fans who say, no, you know, Daniel Levy said this and that. And I'll even say, look, you had stadium delays, you had construction cost overruns, you had personal seat licenses where you had to return some money to people because the stadium didn't open on time. So I think the stadium was exceedingly sanitized, how they talked about that. Mm-hmm. And they didn't talk enough about what leaving White Hart Lane meant to that club. So, yeah, I think on some fronts it was very sanitized and propaganda-ish.
Yeah, I would be more interested in watching the film that was on the cutting room floor, the film that the segments or interviews that they did that didn't end up in the final documentary series, to see what they left out. You mean, did they interview Eriksson, say, hey, Christian, give us your viewpoint on the developments here. Like, what's happening? Is it, you mean, this is what we're hearing from the club and from Daniel Levy. Is that reality? I mean, what's happening on your side of the story? And those types of things. And yeah, Daniel Levy looks like a god after this broadcast in terms of the way he works and he cares, but he's very businesslike, and he's meeting with, Roger Goodell from NFL and giving them a tour of the stadium and showing them how big the club is and so involved in this club, which I'm sure he is. I just think it was just too polished for my liking. But it was worth watching, for sure. It's not going to be for everyone. All right, Kartik, let's move on to TV streaming news. And this is one that we've been waiting for a very long time, and with very good news. And I think both you and I are excited about it.
Yeah, very excited about the debut season of the Bundesliga on ESPN and ESPN Plus, which will kick off on September 18th, Friday, September 18th, later this week, with the champions of Europe, Bayern Munich kicking off against Schalke, who had a very disappointing season last season, live from the Allianz Arena at 2:30 p.m. Derek Ray has joined returned to ESPN as their lead Bundesliga commentator. He will continue to do World Feed Bundesliga matches, we understand. He will be paired with Taylor Twellman. That's no surprise. So that's going to be a really interesting duo. I think two of the top voices in the English language. You're going to have a Bundesliga countdown live on the ESPN app Friday at 1:30 p.m. You're going to have ESPN FC Live hosted by Kay Murray on ESPN at 2 p.m., which will feature Taylor Twellman as well. And there's going to be all kinds of additional content on the ESPN Plus platform. Immediately following the first match, the Friday match, which is on ESPN, you'll have an ESPN FC stream on ESPN Plus that runs live. Mentioned Derek Ray is coming back to ESPN, and he's very recognizable to everyone. Jan Aage Fort, the former Norway national team forward and played for Borough at one time in the Premier League, joins ESPN as a Bundesliga studio analyst and will be on ESPN FC as well. By the way, Derek Ray will also be on ESPN FC covering the Bundesliga, which fits a hole in their team since Rafa Honigstein has moved on. Although Don Hutchison, by the way, who's also on that Premier League TV channel I talked about earlier, he's done a good job talking about the Bundesliga. He clearly follows the league pretty closely. But they add Derek Ray to ESPN FC. Kay Murray will be hosting, speaking of Borough, she's a big Borough fan, will be hosting the studio show and will host ESPN FC Live. There's a number of other really exciting developments with the Bundesliga. By the way, in the package we got, Chris, from ESPN, SportsCenter highlights are going to be featured, Bundesliga highlights on SportsCenter. So that's something to really kind of look forward to. Soccer Made in Germany.
Hey,
a library for how you and I grew up watching soccer in this country, or once you moved here, will be on ESPN Plus, which is the great Toby Charles. That's going to be amazing. There's going to be some classic Bundesliga matches also on ESPN Plus, and I'm sure there's some stuff I've left out that you can fill in.
Yeah, actually, you did a great job of filling it all in. I think the only thing I could say is that Derek Ray will also be doing some of the World Feed commentaries. So even if he's not doing a broadcast on ESPN Plus, we'll probably hear him on ESPN Plus through doing the World Feed for worldwide, and ESPN picking up that commentary feed. But yeah, this is pretty amazing, Kartik. All the plans that they have in place, not just for this opening weekend, but for the season. And I know that there's people on Twitter saying that they're going to subscribe to ESPN Plus just because of Soccer Made in Germany. And for most of our listeners and readers and followers, most of them have probably never seen Toby Charles and Soccer Made in Germany. But if you want to go back and you have some free time once this launches on ESPN Plus, hopefully this weekend, go back and take a look. This is a program that was so influential to soccer in the United States. It was practically the only soccer show on television. I mean, these days, like, what? We get like about 80 to 200 games a week on television. Back then, the best that we had was a highlights package from the previous week, I think it was, or the few days before that. And it was a 60-minute show, if that. I don't know. It was really short, and that was it. That was it for the whole entire week. We had nothing else. So, hats off to ESPN for some big plans here, too. And we questioned when the Bundesliga moved from Fox to ESPN if this would hurt them as far as the reach, as far as the number of viewers. But maybe with an effort like this, with the marketing behind it, maybe that audience will actually end up being bigger than what it was on Fox. It's definitely heading in the right direction based on their plans. Now, one of the people that we spoke about several months ago, I think this would have been probably January, and that from my sources were telling me that the two people, which I'm not sure if we even mentioned this on the podcast, but the two people that were planning on being the commentator and co-commentator for games of the Bundesliga on ESPN Plus, at that time was going to be Adrian Healy and Taylor Twellman. Well, things have changed. This week, Adrian Healy has announced that he's going to become the English language TV voice of Austin FC, the MLS team that's going to be launching in the near future. So Adrian Healy will continue at ESPN until December, and then he'll head to Austin FC to be their commentator, and I'm sure doing a lot of TV work for them. He will be back for Euro 2020, so he'll be available, I think, on a basically a freelance basis to work when given the opportunity, and he'll be there for Euro 2020. But some of his career highlights, Adrian Healy, he's got the record for the most number of MLS play-by-play broadcasts in ESPN history, more than 250. He's had 8 seasons as the lead MLS play-by-play commentator from 2011 to 2018. He's done 6 MLS Cups. He's done 5 UEFA Champions League finals, 3 FIFA World Cup finals, and 2 FIFA Women's World Cup finals, and plus much, much more. So congratulations to Adrian Healy, a big move for him. And it sounds like it's going to be a really good opportunity with a new club and starting off in the heart of Texas.
Yeah, you talk about scoring a goal from 40 yards out on your first in your first match. If you're Austin FC, I mean, there's no one better you could hire other than maybe Max Brados, who got taken by LAFC, right? It's an unbelievable hire for Austin FC. I mean, we're going to miss Adrian Healy on ESPN outside of the Euro 2020 you mentioned, and has been a fantastic advocate, I think, for soccer in the United States and for American soccer on ESPN for 2 decades now. We'll miss him, but kudos to Austin. What a hire. I can't speak enough of how strong a statement of intent this is by that club, and makes me question why some other MLS clubs don't go after that level of broadcaster, if I'm being perfectly honest about it. But what a hire.
Yeah. I mean, Inter Miami picked up Ray Hudson on a part-time basis, and Adrian Healy's definitely, I mean, knows MLS inside and out. So as far as finding somebody that has that knowledge base and the contacts and, I mean, knows the league inside out. There's very few that have the quality level that Adrian provides for MLS. Kartik, moving on to the next news item.
Yeah, so the theme of the podcast today has been Peacock. Comcast CEO Brian Roberts says Peacock has added 5 million new signups since they launched in July, with the total number of signups thus far rising to 15 million. So that's those are pretty substantial numbers when you think about streaming, because people buy streaming platforms with the intent to use them. It's not like cable channels where you say, oh, a cable channel's in 70 million homes, but a lot of people may not know that they have that channel, right? There's a more of a buy-in with streaming. So those are pretty impressive numbers for just a couple months in for Comcast and for Peacock. Not quite the numbers we saw from Disney Plus when they launched and their bundle launched a couple months earlier. COVID has got me confused. It was before COVID, so it must have been late last year. But still some pretty impressive numbers.
And then the last news item is it's official. This is something that we talked about in the previous podcast. But CBS All Access will be renamed in 2021 to Paramount Plus. So the new name will be the home of the UEFA Champions League and UEFA Europa League. If you subscribe to CBS All Access, you don't have to do anything differently. It's just going to be a new name and a new branding. But sometime in 2021, it will be Paramount Plus. All right, Kartik, moving on to TV ratings. And we got a record breaker here. This one, I want to get your take on this one. So Liverpool against Leeds on NBC, highly anticipated game. It was on NBC plus Telemundo, plus, of course, the NBC Sports app. And the total delivery on this one in terms of number of viewers was 1.53 million people. It's the most watched Premier League opening weekend game in U.S. history. And out of that 1.5 million viewers, 1.2 million of those watched the game on NBC. Why? Why is this number as big as it is, in your opinion?
Because it's Leeds. The number of people who've been waiting for Leeds to get promoted again And first of all, it was a season opener, and Liverpool is the reigning champion. So let's concede that before people get angry. But concede? I don't know. Yeah, I don't know how many fans of the Premier League understand the number of Leeds United fans that I knew this was going to be the case, because there were Leeds fans everywhere I've traveled in this world. There are Leeds fans, and they're not necessarily fans of other clubs that were established Premier League clubs at this point. I mean, and there were Leeds fans in India, there are Leeds fans in South Africa, there are Leeds fans in Argentina, there are Leeds fans everywhere. And there were a lot in the United States that have just, you know, kind of drifted the last 15 years, and this was an opportunity for them to watch their team. And I saw it on social media, by the way. The number of people that I didn't even realize were Leeds fans that I've you know, connected with on social media through the years, whether they were here in the States, there are a number of them, and elsewhere. So I think that's a big part of it. This is, I've said this for many, many years. People have listened to me, not necessarily on this show, but on other shows I've been on. And our friend, former host of this show, Richard Farley, and I have had so many conversations about it, I think for the last decade, about the Premier League's missing piece is the fact that Leeds is not in the Premier League, because it's one of the biggest cities in Britain. It's a one club town. When I go up and down the M1 in the UK, I find more Leeds fans than I find Liverpool or Man United or Arsenal fans. And there are so many Leeds fans in this country. That was something that we've talked about for so long, him and I and some other people. So I think that had a lot to do with it. This was Leeds' first match back. And then I think also, quite honestly, people like to watch Liverpool because there's an entertainment level with those players and with that club. So I think that's it. You don't get this. You get this matchup twice a year now. So what I want to see is if there's other compelling matchups in the league this year that give us this sort of number. This was a blowaway. This was almost a Club America versus Chivas number. That's how high it was.
Well, that's the challenge with this one too, because it's such a high watermark from the opening weekend. And you're right. I mean, definitely Leeds United have a really fanatical fan base. And through generations, through families, there's a lot of people in the United States alone who are Leeds United supporters. They've followed Leeds that maybe are from Yorkshire, or maybe not. There's a lot of Americans that are Leeds United fans. In some ways, it reminds me a little bit of Boca Juniors, and a little bit of St. Pauli, in terms of just how fanatical, how almost cult-like these fans are about those clubs. And the same thing happens with Leeds United. For many people, it might appear to be that Leeds fans coming out of the woodwork in terms of just large numbers. But it is what it is. I mean, that is a huge factor to this number. Of course, Liverpool have done a fantastic job in this country of really marketing themselves, of really, in terms of the supporters groups, the fan base, getting really involved, coming back season after season during the summer to play games, to travel the country, to go to Canada, to go to the Northeast, to go around this country playing games and doing the hard work. And from a marketing perspective and promotion perspective, they've done a fantastic job. And going back to the NBC Premier League Fan Fest back in December in Miami Beach, I was just blown away by how many Leeds fans there were. Liverpool fans, they were there. They just took over the entire fan fest. I mean, I just couldn't believe it. So a match made in heaven. You got the Liverpool fanaticals against the Leeds fanaticals. Also to neutrals. I mean, I think this is something. I mean, the last Premier League match was in July, end of July. It's been a long wait. We've gone through a lot of BS. I mean, this year in terms of the pandemic, BS as in it's been a downer of a year. And then the other part of it, Kartik, college football. The lack of college football being played. This is creating a pent up demand, I think, and also an opportunity for NBC to get in front of an audience that may otherwise be preoccupied. But yeah, absolutely fantastic number from this one. All right, let's move on to listener mailbag. And first up is Jerry. Jerry says, great podcast, but I got to disagree with Chris about his take about MLS fans being jealous about ICC attendance. The attendance for the ICC has been nothing special. Chris mentions the games at Michigan State, games of 108,000 and 101,000 in 2014 and 2018. But there is no way to deny that attendance has been steeply down the last few years. In 2019, there were 11 games besides a few capacity games at MLS stadiums. Half of the 11 were less than half full, and even the better attended games in the bigger stadiums were less than two-thirds full. While some of these numbers aren't horrible, I don't see why MLS would feel jealous when there are MLS sides that pull equal or better. And yeah, ICC 2019 was definitely I wouldn't say a disaster, but it was definitely a low point in the history of ICC. It seems that every year the attendance records would go up and up and up from the previous year. 2019, we had Women's World Cup, we had Copa America. What else do we have? We had, was it Gold Cup?
Gold Cup.
And there might have been a fourth tournament too, I'm trying to think, but anyway, that's
Couple of African nations we had.
Ah, there you go. So that summer was filled with non-stop games. I mean, some days we had like what, I think seven major international games on a day, so people were glued to that. So that had a factor where I think people just got burnt out, and then watching basically about 8 weeks of soccer intensively on television day by day, and then the ICC arrives, and at that point we're burnt out, we want to have a break before the new season. But yeah, Jerry, I do agree that 2019 was definitely a low point. Robert says, Chelsea on top, I sure hope not. Money does not always mean quality. Leeds are back. My love for hard-working teams makes them one I will watch, but cash is still their problem. Just look at the payrolls. Before this transfer window, the actual payroll was for Leeds was about $15 million. Their first game was against Liverpool, whose payroll is about $145 million. So serious hard work will be necessary. And I think that serious hard work, we saw that day one. I think that will actually close the gap. It's not going to close the gap with Manchester City or Chelsea, but it is going to close the gap and surprise a lot of teams. I think it's going to be difficult to know how to play against Leeds, Kartik. I think, like you said in last week's podcast, there might be some games where Leeds loses 4 or 5-0 and then they're right back at it the next game. Don't change their philosophy. Don't change their style. But it's one to watch for sure.
Yeah, I agree.
Danny Segura says, great podcast, guys. I just wonder how things will go with Peacock this season. If NBC continues to put marquee matches on Peacock, then it makes me wonder if we will be losing soccer fans in America because of this. Think about it. They are basically hiding the sport away from everyone else by putting quality games behind a paywall. To my knowledge, NBC hasn't done this to the NHL games. So why soccer? I refuse to take part in limiting the exposure of the game to America's wide audience and television. What are your views on soccer becoming streaming exclusive? To me, Kartik, we're at the point in time where you look at the different leagues and the different competitions out there that are available to us soccer-wise, and the only two that are pretty much like TV strongholds are Liga MX and La Liga, as far as leagues, club leagues. And you look at the World Cup and the Women's World Cup, and that's about it, pretty much. Everything else, I mean, almost 50% of the Premier League games are exclusive to streaming. You look at the Bundesliga, every single game on streaming. Serie A, every single game on streaming. We're almost at that point in time where 2 years from now, when the Premier League rights are up and someone else comes in to bid on those rights, it's very possible that 100% of those games could be on streaming. You got the UEFA Champions League, pretty much exclusively on streaming, except for now and again CBS having a game or CBS Sports Network having a game. So Yeah, so in terms of Danny saying that he doesn't want to support limiting the exposure of the game in this way, it's reality. It's unfortunately, it'd be great if everything was free on television, but that's not the way things are heading.
Yeah, and I think it's also important to note when we think about this that there are still a lot of games on television, right? I mean, it's not everything has gone to streaming. Certainly less games on television than we had 5 years ago, but we still have more Premier League matches on television than we do as a percentage of the league than we will have Bundesliga, Serie A, and obviously Champions League.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Well, if you think that one was bad in terms of talking about Peacock, listen to this one, which is Nick. Nick says, on a show a few weeks back, you mentioned the CONMEBOL World Cup qualifying is only available by pay-per-view and that each match was priced at $100. Is there any alternative to this? It's a ridiculous price that, out of principle, I won't be paying, even if it were $100 for a single match day of five games, I still wouldn't pay. So this is reality. This is what CONMEBOL has signed a deal with a streaming provider called Fite, F-I-T-E, and they have the exclusive rights in both English language and Spanish language to World Cup qualifying for the CONMEBOL. So your Argentinas, your Brazils, Colombias, Uruguays, etc. The price, I believe it's $100, and you get, I think it's for a single match day, so you would get five games for those $100. But most fans going into this are probably, I mean, if you're a Colombian fan, you'll watch Colombia play, but you're not so much interested in watching, you know, Paraguay or Venezuela or some of the other teams playing. So you're going in there having to pay $100, and that's the only way that legally you can watch those games. We found out about this probably back in February or March, and I was going to write an article about it, but I held off because of the pandemic. And I've held off on this, on posting it, because CONMEBOL keeps on delaying the World Cup qualifying. Originally, it was back in March, but then it was going to be September. No, I think August, and then September. Then it was going to be October. Now they're talking about perhaps 2021, because a lot of the players from the CONMEBOL countries are based in Europe. So you got your Argentines and your Brazilians and Colombians. A lot of them play in the top leagues in Europe. And it's going to be very difficult to get them to come, I mean, in terms of the pandemic still, to come to travel to South America for these games. It's a complete mess. It's a complete nightmare. And that's just the games and then the actual streaming themselves, which is going to be streaming online, basically with prices that we've never seen before. I mean, $100 for, you mean, a package of games. This is kind of 1990s. Scenario, but it is reality. And when we get to closer to that that World Cup qualifying, and when CONMEBOL kind of says, okay, here's the games, this is when it's going to happen, then I'll go ahead and write the piece. And if you imagine that people how shocked and pissed off they were about Peacock, wait until this happens, Kartik.
Yeah, well, one little caveat here that, and I'm going to throw out some rumors. They're not necessarily, I'm not going to source them. They're not necessarily founded at this point, but everything's on the table. There are rumors going around that the Copa next year, the rescheduled Copa, which is a Copa that was going to be split between Argentina and Colombia, may end up having to serve as a proxy for qualifying in some manner, because they're going to run out of dates otherwise. So Wow. We might. Well, we don't know where the Copa is going to be broadcast, right? But I was thinking we might get a little bit of a respite for some of the matches if they do use the Copa to qualify.
What a mess.
Well, CONMEBOL, was on the record not wanting to do that, but there are just rumors floating around that there's no way that they can do this, that they can get 18 qualifiers in between March of 2021 and when would qualifying have to be done? It was supposed to be done in November of 2021. So I can't, yeah. I mean, maybe March of 2022. There's still no way.
Right, exactly. And then last but not least, Roberto says, is the Women's Super League becoming the women's version of the Premier League, buying up most of the world's best women players?
Okay, so first of all, Lyon is still much better than any team in England. So Lyon has the best players in the world that are not American. And then I would say PSG is the second best team, and I think Wolfsburg is probably better than any team in England. But they're certainly making a statement, the WSL, and that they can come into the U.S. and take players from the U.S. who are the established leaders in global women's football. So the Press Heath deal hasn't happened yet with Man United, but it very well might. They'll get that across the line. We know Sam Kerr's gone to Chelsea. She's arguably the best player in the world. She's Australian, by the way, but she obviously we've played in NWSL. Mewis and Lavelle going to Man City. A couple moves for Arsenal as well. So and Alex Morgan now on loan to Spurs. They're making that statement of intent, and I think as a league, they're going to have more stars than other leagues. But I still think the two best women's teams outside the United States, and maybe the two best teams in the world. I think you put Lyon in NWSL, it's them in North Carolina at the top, right, fighting. I still think the two best teams are in the French league at this moment.
Wow. So, Kartik, we got a lot to get to for the next episode. So next episode, I mean, we're definitely going to talk about Peacock a lot more. But one of the things to keep an eye out for this weekend, too, coming up is, of course, a lot of games on Peacock, as we've mentioned. On the website, worldsoccertalk.com, we've got an article, which is how to watch the Premier League on Peacock TV, which goes through every single option available to you, even if you have a Roku, even if you have an Amazon Fire TV stick, or even if you have Comcast or Cox. There's a lot of good information there. We also have an FAQ that goes into a lot of details. And of course, too, launched last week, we have the brand new free ebook, which is called The Ultimate Soccer TV and Streaming Guide, which goes through every single league. It's available in the US on television and streaming, as well as every single competition, etc., and cup, etc. About 22 pages, packed full of some great information. So check all those things out at worldsoccertalk.com. And we want you to have your say, too. So if you do have any questions about anything we've talked about on this podcast, or you have questions about streaming, about watching games on television, tech questions, or some feedback on some of the things we've been talking about, or some suggestions or other things we should talk about in future episodes, you can always reach us via email through web@worldsoccertalk.com, as well as facebook.com/worldsoccertalk, and on Twitter @worldsoccertalk. Plus, of course, you can always post your comments on worldsoccertalk.com. Kartik, heading into another weekend with a lot to look forward to. The start of the Bundesliga, the new season. I'm excited. On Friday, you've got, of course, I think Serie A starting this weekend too.
Yeah.
A big weekend for Serie A in Italy. And we saw how good it was last season. Hopefully it can pick right off in terms of a title race there. You got the Premier League mostly on Peacock, so definitely be prepared for that one, as well as soccer from around the world. And what are you going to be doing, and what should the listeners do?
Enjoy your football.